All right, good morning again. It's good to see everybody here this morning. If you're visiting, we're honored to have you worship with us today. This lesson is going to be a little bit different this morning, but if you will take a Bible and please be turning to Psalm 145. Psalm 145, we're going to be there in a few minutes. While you're turning over there, just real quick, I want to also mention this. You heard Glenn this morning in his prayer, said a special prayer for Greg Dahl's daughter, and Greg asked that she be added to your prayer list. She is going for surgery tomorrow morning, but she could use your prayers for her recovery as well. So Greg Dahl's daughter, her name is Diana. So please keep her in our prayers. Also, I'd like to just mention that one of the toughest Sundays to ever preach on is Potluck Sunday. So if you're sitting there further to the back and you smell good food, don't run out. I told somebody beforehand this lesson was going to be short and sweet. Well, I don't know about that. It'll be different. And so it might actually, no, I don't want to scare anybody. Anyway, so we're going to be talking about some Thanksgiving. You know, because I think this is the week, isn't it? That Turkey Day is Thursday. No, it's the next week. Next week. All right. Well, it's coming up soon. See, it's already on my mind. So anyway, it's coming up and we're thinking about it. And a few weeks ago, the elders and I were talking about some different ideas and things we could talk about over the next several months. And I said, you know, there's a question that I often ask myself as I'm putting together lessons. And the question is, you know, why? And so we're going to think about this over the next several months. Why be then whatever? And this morning, we're going to be talking about why be thankful. It's interesting. That should have a white screen, and there should be a giant question mark next to it. So anyway, technical things. But why? Why be thankful, right? Next month's going to be really similar. Why be grateful? And we'll talk more about that. This is what I'm firmly convinced of. When we talk about being thankful and giving thanksgiving, I am convinced that we as Christians ought to be the most thankful people on the planet Earth. It is not just a one-time thing. It is not just a once-a-year type of thing. You know, I'm thankful for turkey and stuffing and the traditional Thanksgiving Day foods. But, you know, I am thankful that we don't eat that way every day of the week throughout the entire year. Because, I don't know, if you're like me, by the end of two or three days of having a leftover turkey, I'm done with it. But it's fun for a few days. Talking to you, Jody. Anyway, thankfulness is on our mind. You know, the month of November and as we approach the upcoming holiday, why be thankful? I came across an article. I want to share this with you as I was thinking about it, because there are so many different directions that we could go studying in the Bible about thankfulness and Thanksgiving. But I came across an article. It was on Dave Ramsey's website. Most of us in here are familiar with Dave Ramsey. He didn't write this article, but it was an article written by a lady by the name of Christy Wright. And she shares 10 reasons I'm thankful for thankfulness. And I want to share those with you at this time. I'm going to run through these 10 things. Number one, thankfulness improves relationships. Number two, thankfulness creates contentment. Number three, thankfulness feels good. Number four, thankfulness keeps us healthy. Number five, thankfulness cultivates humility. Number six, thankfulness is contagious. And you stop there and you think about it. You know, if you're hanging out with people that are not thankful, does that attitude not trickle down to you? So when you're a thankful person, you're a blessing to other people. So just remember that. And it's good to hang out with people that have that attitude of thankfulness. Number seven, thankfulness produces positivity. Not sure that's a real word, but that's the word she used. Number eight, thankfulness promotes generosity. Number nine, thankfulness increases likability. Man, who doesn't want to be likable? Who doesn't want to have friends, right? So be a thankful person. Now people will like you and you'll have more friends. Number 10, thankfulness displays God's character. That one really jumped out at me. as I was reading through the list. Thankfulness displays God's character. She said in this article, the Bible is full of passages on gratitude and thankfulness. It's used in commands, parables, and prayers. This quality is important to God. So, when we actively practice gratefulness, we become more of who God created us to be. Plus, we also get to connect with Him through our thankful thoughts and prayers. Unlike talent, gratitude is something that's freely available to all of us and completely within our control. It's not a special, she said, gifting or talent that some people have and others don't. It's not a feeling that floats through the air at the end of each November. She says, it's a choice. She went on to say, every day we get to choose to be thankful and to experience the side benefits of gratefulness all year long. We get to do that every day as Christians. And I really appreciate what she said, that it's a choice, right? We can wake up each morning and we can be thankful or we cannot be thankful. Why be thankful? I think the answer is this. It's short and sweet, and the answer is God. That's why we should be thankful, because of God and because who God is. And so I mentioned earlier that this lesson is going to be a little bit different, because traditionally I'll have us turn to one passage and then we'll spend the bulk of our time analyzing that particular passage. This morning it's going to be different because we're going to look at three different passages and how it relates to thankfulness, but more importantly, how does it relate to God? And so the first passage that I had us turn to was Psalm 145. And we ought to be thankful for the complexity of God. Psalm 145, and if you're there, notice with me verse number 3, where King David says, great is the Lord and greatly to be praised, and his greatness is what? It is unsearchable, David said. And so Psalm 145 is the last psalm which is attributed to King David, and it is, just for your notes and just for us to keep in mind what's going on here, it is one of the seven psalms that are what is known as a Hebrew alphabetic acrostic. Each line of this particular psalm starts with one of the Hebrew letters in the alphabet. I think we lose some of that a little bit in the English language. But it is a psalm of monumental praise. And it is my understanding that the Jewish people would practice reading this psalm 3 times a day. And how much richer would our lives be if we took the time in the morning when we get up to read the psalm in its entirety, and then around afternoon time to read the psalm again, and then before we go to bed to reread Psalm 145. Because he opens this psalm extolling, that is, giving God praise forever and ever, because what we read about there in verse number 3. Because the Lord is great, and he deserves to be praised. And because of his complexity, you see, his greatness is unsearchable. Now, David didn't mean that we can't and that we shouldn't search it out, but it means this. It means that it is beyond our understanding. And in the remainder of this particular psalm, while we're not going to read it, you might want to jot Psalm 145 down and study it the course of this next week. But if we look at it and look at some of these verses, just highlight these verses, we're going to see some of these things that make God complex that we should certainly be thankful about. If you notice verses 4 through 7, right, he says, one generation is going to praise you and your works. They're going to declare your mighty acts. So he's talking about the acts of God. In verse number 5, he talks about the glorious splendor of God and, again, his wondrous works. He says, verse number 6, that men shall speak of the might of your awesome acts again, and I will declare your greatness. We could do that as well. In verse number 7, they shall utter the memory of your great goodness. it shall ring of your righteousness. And so here we see David talking about God's works and acts and his glory and his splendor, his greatness, his goodness, and his righteousness. All great things for us to remember, right? And that we should be thankful for. Verse 10 through 13, we read about God's power and his eternality. Verses 8 and 9, you see about David talking about the Lord's grace and compassion and his patience, and how that the Lord is slow to anger and great in mercy. We see that the Lord is good to all, isn't he? And again, he reemphasizes his tender mercies and over all of his work. Again, going back to verses 10 through 13, talking about God's power and his eternality and his everlasting kingdom. Shouldn't we be thankful for that kingdom that is unshakable, right? And today we know that it would be a reference to the kingdom of God being the church, and we can be thankful to God for that. Verses 14 through 16, we have this expression of praise and thanksgiving and how God rules in his kingdom. And we see how God even helps those that are discouraged and weak. And verses 17 through 21, David's reminding us that God is righteous, not just in some of his ways, but in all of his ways. So it sounds a little bit challenging that we should be thankful to God because of the complexity of God. So what does this mean for us? God's not like us, is he? He's above us. You know, as much as we would like to be perfect in all these ways, we make mistakes, don't we? Because we're human and we make errors. God, on the other hand, is perfect in all that he does. We look to God, we follow God. He's good. He's always good. He's always gracious. He's always merciful. He's always compassionate. He's always patient. He helps those that are discouraged and come to him. And if we're honest with ourselves, don't we struggle with being good and gracious and merciful and being patient and compassionate in helping those that are discouraged from time to time? See, God's always those things. And we can be thankful for that, can't we? You know, there are other passages, such as Isaiah 40 and verse number 28 that talk about how we have a hard time as human beings comprehending and fathoming God. You know, scriptures tell us that God's ways are not our ways. His thoughts are above our thoughts. They're higher than our thoughts. I've seen some things lately in scientific things. You know, we homeschool, and Chloe, I'm not sure where Chloe's sitting at this time. Oh, there she is. But she was watching something the other day, and so she had some questions about it, and scientists were trying to explain things without God. And we tried to explain to her that scientists will see the end result of some things, but because they don't believe in God, they try to answer it without God. And we as Christians, we don't do that. And so what we're seeing more and more of is the world trying to dismiss God. And we can be thankful as Christians that we don't do that. We can be thankful as Christians that we want to dig deeper into the scriptures so that we can know God a little bit better, even though he is complex. Even though he is complex. And we look at those list of things here in Psalm 145. I don't know about you, but I'm thankful that God's merciful and gracious and loving and encouraging all the time. All the time. So why be thankful? Because, number one, the complexity of God. Turn in your Bibles to the next passage. Still in the Old Testament, we're going to go back to the book of Exodus. We're going to turn back to Exodus chapter 34. Exodus 34, and we're going to be in verses 12 through 14. Exodus 34, verses 12 through 14. Another reason that we're thankful for God is because he's a jealous God. We can be thankful that he's a jealous God. Exodus chapter 34, 12 through 14. And that might seem a little bit confusing too. I think when we think about it, might be part of those, part of that complex nature of God. The Israelite people were told, Exodus 34, starting in verse number 12, "Take heed to yourself, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land where you are going, lest there be a snare in your midst. But you shall destroy their altars, break their sacred pillars, and cut down their wooden images. For you shall worship no other god, for the Lord, whose name is jealous, is what? He is a jealous God." And they were warned in the next couple of verses why he was a jealous God and the potential problems that they would run into if they didn't tear down those altars. He warns them and says, "Lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they play the harlot with their gods and make sacrifice to their gods, and one of them invites you and you eat of his sacrifice and take you of his daughters for your sons, and his daughters play the harlot with their gods and make your sons play the harlot with their gods." There was the warning. It was a clear warning to the Israelite people. Go in. As you're going into the promised land, remember to destroy the altars, drive out the pagan people. Otherwise, this is going to happen. And we've been studying here in the adult class in the auditorium, the book of Judges. And boy, that's exactly what we see. They fell into that those traps that the Lord warned them about there in Exodus chapter 34. But we struggle with this when we see that our God is a jealous God. We struggle with this as people because we use the words jealousy and envy interchangeably. And the way we view jealousy and envy is that it's wrong and it's sinful, right? You know, I'm reminded of James chapter 3, verse 14. It says, "But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth." Later on in that chapter, James says, "For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and evil thing are there." James 3, verse 16. See, one of the problems is the word for envy. Some translations word it jealousy or jealous. The original word, though, is where we get our English word zealous. And so here's the complexity of God. Here's the idea. When people pursue things other than God, then he's jealous. He is jealous because of this. As one person said, in the original language, the word means to have a zeal over one's property. It means hands off, this belongs to me. And so God gets upset when things that belong to him pursue other things other than him. Because he wants to be first place. He wants to be number one in our lives. And God is the same God today as he was back then. And he doesn't want anything to come between us and him. And you think about it, he's jealous for us because he wants the very best for us. We were talking a little bit earlier about the Church of Corinth, right? How one of their problems was them forgetting the purpose of partaking of the Lord's Supper. Boy, you study the book of 1 Corinthians and you see they just had a lot of problems. And by the time Paul wrote to them the second letter, they were correcting some things, and that was good. They were on the right path, repenting and doing the right thing. But Paul hadn't learned that yet, that they were fully repentant. And he shares with them in his second letter some of his feelings toward them and some of the things that he was feeling as they were in error. And he says to them in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, "For I am jealous for you with godly jealousy. For I have betrothed you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ." 2 Corinthians 11 and verse number 2. Now, Paul had that godly jealousy for them because they went off the rails, so to speak. They were doing other things that they involved with other things that they shouldn't have been. And so not only would Paul been jealous, but God would have been jealous over that as well. This is what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for God because God saw from the very beginning, right, back there in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve sinned. And while everything was perfect in the garden and Adam and Eve had that perfect relationship with God, after they sinned, that relationship split. And so I'm thankful that God saw that there's a problem in the world now, and that problem is sin. And it bothered him. And the only way to correct that problem was to eventually send his son Jesus to go to the cross and to die for us. And so I'm thankful that God was bothered by that, and he offers a way back to him through redemption. And I'm glad that God gets upset when people don't put him first. We can be thankful for the jealousy of God. Why be thankful? Let's turn over to a New Testament passage. In Romans chapter 2, we can be thankful that God is impartial. We can be thankful for the impartiality of God. Romans chapter 2 and verse number 11, it's a short and sweet statement that Paul makes here. In fact, if you're not there yet, I'm going to read it, and you may miss it because it's so short. Paul says there in verse number 11, "For there is no partiality with God." So something that we need to keep in mind as we reflect on what Paul is meaning here in Romans 2, verse number 11, is obviously the context of the book of Romans. This was a book that was written to Christians in the city of Rome. There was, at one point, the Jews were dispelled from the city. In fact, we're told about that in Acts chapter 18. Acts 18, starting verse number 1, tells us, "After these things, Paul departed from Athens, and he went to the city of Corinth, and he found a certain Jew named Aquila, born in Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to depart from Rome, and he came to them." That's Acts 18, verses 1 and 2. And so during Claudius's reign, which many people believe was sometime between 51 and 52 A.D., all the Jews were expelled from Rome. So that would have been Jewish Christians as well. So up to this point, the church in Rome was made up of both Jews and Gentile Christians. But at some point in time, Jews returned back to the city of Rome. Obviously, there would have been Christian Jews would have returned as well. So now you would have had this conflict between the incoming Jewish Christians and those Gentile Christians that were worshiping there. And so Paul's dealing a little bit with this conflict. And so he sets forth in the opening portion of the book of Romans, the first few chapters, and he lays forth the premise that in chapter 1, he addresses the Gentile people, the Gentile Christians. And then in chapter 2, he addresses the Jewish Christians. And then by the time you get up to chapter 3, he's addressing all people, both Jews and Gentiles. And the premise that he is making from the very beginning is that all people need to obey God and obey the gospel. And so in this theological treatise, if you will, from Romans 2, verse number 11, Paul declares that God is not partial, right? And he laid forth in chapter 1 that the gospel is God's power unto salvation, to the Jew first and also to the Greek, the Gentile. I don't know about you, but I am very thankful that God is not partial. To be partial means that he shows favorites, right? We know that parents are not to play favorites in family amongst their children. Or we even see that played out a little bit in the scriptures. It doesn't end well. We ought to be thankful that God didn't say the good looking can be saved, but the ugly people can't. right? That's very subjective. And I'm afraid I would fall in the ugly category. No comments or giggles. I am thankful that God didn't say the rich and powerful will be saved. On the other hand, I'm thankful that God didn't say only the poor people will be saved. I'm thankful that God didn't say this, only a certain nation, or only a certain group of people, or only a certain race will be saved, or only those people that I like will be saved. You know, I'm sure every one of us in here, especially the older you get, you can think of somebody in your life that for whatever reason, they don't like you. Personality conflict or whatever. You know what, I'm thankful they are not my judge. Because again, it goes back to the complexity of God. He is right, he is fair, he's perfect. But I'm reminded that that's where we're different than God. Because if we're not careful, we can show favorites. We could treat different people in different ways, can't we? Please study the life of Jesus. Read through the New Testament, the gospel accounts there in the New Testament. Look at the people that Jesus associated with when he came to this earth. I mean, I think Jesus clearly shows that he wasn't showing favorites by the example that he left behind. Jesus associated with and he hung out with and he taught the people that were the misfits, the outcast, the lowly, the people that the majority of society did not want to associate with. He cured the people with diseases. Those would have been the people that there was the rules and regulations about avoiding those people. Jesus went to them and showed them compassion. He came for all people. We need to be thankful. We need to be thankful that he's a fair and righteous judge. I'm thankful that God is not like us. I'm thankful that he's much more complex. I'm thankful that he's always fair. He's always right. He's always just. He's always there to hear our pleas and our petitions. May we, with the Apostle Paul, say this as he was writing to the church at Corinth. Thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 15, verse number 57. This morning, one of the greatest things that Jesus did was he came to this earth, the life that he lived and eventually going to the cross, so that all people can have the hope of eternal life. But he did his part. He did his part. But humanity must do their part. And Paul says that one of those things that we as humans need to do is we need to obey the gospel. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. Paul said that God is going to take vengeance on those in flaming fire that do not know him, and those that do not obey the gospel. And the gospel is the good news to save people, Romans 1, 16 and 17. And so we have to obey it. And you may be thinking, well, what exactly is the gospel? It's the good news. It's what Paul said. He went everywhere. He preached it. He taught it to people. He just told people about Jesus and the life that Jesus lived and going to the cross to give us the hope of being in heaven. That's what he said he preached, 1 Corinthians 15, verses 1 through 4. How Jesus lived, he died, and he conquered death, raising up on the third day. Well, how do we obey something that Jesus did? We follow Jesus' example. Romans chapter 6, 1 through 4, we put to death that old person of sin. We bury that person in the waters of baptism. We come up out of that water a new creation. This morning, if you've not put Christ on in baptism, we're here to help assist you in doing that. Or perhaps you're struggling with something in your life. You need the prayers of the church. We're here to help you with that as well. You can If you have a need you'd like to make it known at this time, you can do so as together we stand and as we're led in the invitation song.